Hey Trailblazers, this is Jason, your host of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. Before we jump into our latest episode, I've got some incredible news for you. Are you gearing up for your next big hike or backpacking trip? Well, we at Trailblazing Texas podcast have partnered up with Trekker Joe's, the ultimate Texas outfitter, to bring you something I feel absolutely special. Listeners, you of the Trailblazing Texas podcast can now get a one-time 15% off their gear purchases at Trekker Joe's. That's right. Whether you're a first-time customer at Trekker Joe's or a repeat customer like me, you can save big and hit the trails well-prepared. So upon checkout, use code TTP15 to claim your 15% discount and, in the process, support an amazing local Texas business. So happy trails, and don't forget to tell your hiking buddies. Now on with the episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast. I'm your host, Jason, and coming to us all the way from Bozeman, Montana, we have owner of Angry Pika Food Company, Sean. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. All right. Most important question before we dive into everything about the company, probably the biggest controversy right here. Is it Pika or Pika?
That's a great question. I say Pika. If you want to say Pika, that's fine, but you're wrong. No, it's correct either way. We hear it both ways often at trade shows.
All right, so Pika it is. And I guess it's like you say tomato, I say tomato, pecan.
Correct, yep.
All right, so, you know, I know we talked a little bit before we got, before the podcast started. I love these episodes. I love finding companies that give so much, risk so much to support our hiking and backpacking community. When I found Angry Pika, I was pumped to get you guys on the podcast. You guys are doing some great things, some wonderful meals. So again, I know I've said it 1,000 times. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And I'm really, really excited to have you on as a guest.
We're excited to share our story, and we recently went through a rebrand in the last year, so we're trying to spread the word about our new branding, and really, we just love to sit down with like-minded hikers and backpackers.
So, I've read about how all this started, and I can certainly say to the listeners how it started, but I really can't wait to hear it coming from you. So, what is the story behind Angry Pika Food Company, and were you just like sitting on trail and had a dehydrated breakfast and were like, oh, this is crap, I could do it better? Like what led to the idea of starting this?
You know, it wasn't like that at all. It's been a really, really circuitous route to get to where we are now. So we're 5 years, 6 years in at this point. So in 2019, I had been working for an optics manufacturing company in Bozeman for 9 years, 8-9 years. And so my background is in manufacturing and working for larger corporations. And I was a little tired of that and wanted to work in something I was more passionate in. And I didn't really know what that would look like. So I started an Instagram account. Backcountry Bozeman was the name on the original account, and just started following people. And I said that we're coming online with something, but we weren't quite sure what it was yet. And I slowly refined the idea, and we launched a backcountry food website. So just an e-commerce site carrying nutritious food and drinks and snacks, everything in one place. Just a one-stop shop e-commerce. It wasn't the super novel idea, but we started with that. And then we also ran a subscription box program where we would just give random, I guess, curated boxes out where you would get a surprise in the mail every month. And so we started with those two ideas, and we did that part-time while I worked at my full-time job. And uh, we We ran that for a year and a half, figured out the subscription box idea was not going well. So after 10 months, we abandoned that idea and just did the online food store. And then fast forward to 2020, that's obviously the year that COVID hit. So I got laid off from my job. They knew I was looking to move on and applying at other positions at other companies. So I was ready to move. I had already trained my backfill, and so it was a pretty easy decision for them to let me go. And then my wife and I sat down and decided, I guess, you know, we've got this small little store. This is our chance to see what we can do with it. But we knew we couldn't compete with with Amazon and some of the other e-commerce sites. So we decided to create our own food brand at that time. The store had been called Alpenfuel, so we kept that name. And then we thought that we could make an impact in the breakfast market specifically. A lot of the meals out there, breakfast meals were just a little bit of an afterthought, it seemed. So we targeted really good macros, really high calories with granola and super convenient, just something that we thought was missing from the market. So we launched with four flavors in October of 2020. So after I got laid off, we took 4 or 5 months to get set up as a food manufacturer, take all the safety courses, and then we went live in October with our own lineup.
So is there any meaning behind the name Angry Pika?
Yes. If you fast forward, so we had a few bumps and bruises between starting in 2020 and where we're at today. So in 2024, we were just having a normal day at the kitchen in the fall and got a cease and desist letter in the mail. So, or in the email, I opened up my inbox and had this bombshell drop. So there was a large corporation, multi-billion-dollar corporation that had a smaller company that owned another company that shared one word with us as Alpenfuel. And so they had trademarked the word and they had breakfast meals that were sold, pantry use meals, not necessarily backcountry, but we advised with a lawyer and they told us to back off and we would either have to go quit or move on under a new name. So my wife and I had pizza one day trying to figure out what in the heck to do. Should we give up? Should we pivot? We knew it was going to be expensive and really problematic to rebrand, but that was the only path forward. So I was talking with her about different names, Alpine names that were unique that could be trademarked and wouldn't be infringed on, and Marmot and all the other animals really seemed pretty busy in that space. So I had just jokingly said we should just be Angry Pikas, and then obviously that stuck. So the pika to us, if you're not familiar with it, it's an animal in the rabbit family. They're just a couple ounces in size. They're very tiny. A large mouse, essentially, with rounded ears. But you always see them up in the alpine above tree line. You'll hear them doing their eep call. That's a warning for each other. They do not hibernate, so they're really, really scrappy buggers. I was reading just this last week, they spend all summer collecting grass and flowers for their hay piles. So they live in these talus slopes and they'll make 14, 15,000 trips in the summer, and they'll get enough grass that's about the size, the volume of a bathtub, essentially, and they hide it down in the rocks. So they're just tenacious little buggers. They're always busy. They're always working. I guess they'd be an early indicator for climate change. If the temperatures get above the 70s, then they can't exist. Their bodies won't cool down fast enough. So that's why they live so high. But just they're feisty. And we thought that if we were going to rebrand, that helped capture kind of our brand identity well.
So that is why the pika is angry. That email.
It's a little tongue in cheek. We've always had a lot of humor on our Instagram page, trying to poke fun at people that take themselves a little too seriously. Hiking and backpacking at the end of the day are supposed to be enjoyable. So, part of our commentary on social media is just trying to have fun and not be too serious.
Yeah, nice. So has there been a moment where you thought something happened that these are way more than just recipes, that this is actually a business, and it's heading in the direction that you wanted it to go?
Great question. My wife is kind of the foodie. So when we were developing the recipes, I knew from a backpacker hunter standpoint what I wanted it to look like. Calories per ounce and packaging needed to be small. It needed to be made with hot and cold water, these types of things. So I knew that if we could get that correct and have incredible taste on top of that, that we might have something. But I think our first validation was when we had a friend who said that he knew a buyer for an online company that sold hunting gear, a pretty large one. And so he connected us with that man, and he wanted some samples, so we sent some down. We didn't really even have formalized pricing, so we were working on that, sending him samples, and they passed them around the shop and loved them and wanted to put a PO in place immediately. So that was the first, like, oh, that the market would be receptive to something like that. So I think that's the first time that you have to have those moments every 4 months, 6 months, year to keep believing through the slumps that you get into and the ups and downs. So that was the first big win. I think that we went out, got some pizza, and celebrated that win.
Nice. So what was y'all's first recipe that you ever tasted, and how did it turn out?
We had four recipes initially. I think the first one we made in our kitchen was orange pecan. And I think it turned out really well. I remember having some of that at the kitchen table and really enjoying it. And then that would have been in July. And then the first samples that I took with me backpacking would have been that August in 2020. So I went up in the Beartooth and tried them out in the field and really enjoyed them. But we launched with orange pecan, coconut mango, chocolate strawberry, and lemonberry. So those were the first four out of the gate.
So for the flavoring and stuff, what really inspires that? Is it your own trail experiences? Is it just your wife comes up with it and says, tell me if you like it?
It's a mixture of that. Most of the backpacking granolas on the market are some kind of berry, lemon, not lemon berry necessarily, but just a blueberry granola. Everybody, Mountain House Backpackers Pantry, has one of those. So we wanted to improve that flavor, add some fresh lemon zest. And most of the meals out there were 500 to 600 calories, and ours averaged 700. So we thought that that particular piece could be greatly improved upon.
So when you look at your product line, how do you approach creating a new product? Do you start with flavors that you love, or any kind of specific nutritional goals?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think our approach, so for me, I tend to do 5 to 7 day backpacking trips when I can in the summer, obviously with some overnighters in there. My kids are getting old enough, but it's like I like food that I can eat at home, that I can trust on the trail. So that was part of it. We wanted food that would be stable for your stomach. And so right now we have several customers that have celiac, and they might be trekking. And we had someone trekking in the Arctic with our food last year that was an elder gentleman with celiac, and he praised our food, saying that he could trust it. You know, you can't put those types of people in bad situations where they'll have stomach distress. So I wanted something selfishly for me that I could have enough flavor variety. I didn't want to eat a large breakfast scrambler and then have to go up 2,000 vertical feet hunting through the snow and have, you know, my body hate me. So I wanted something that I could eat day in and day out that would not cause any stomach distress. And we played with the macros a little bit. We talked with a guy that I met who trains ultra athletes, and so he gave us some advice on the macros, and we dialed them in based on his advice and just getting the recipes to taste the way we wanted. So we have lots of nuts in there, They're made with coconut oil. They're made with gluten-free oats, just really, really good nutritious stuff. So we're able to optimize the nutrition. We call it endurance nutrition. So we'll have, I'd say some sheep hunting guides in Alaska that they're big guys and they're carrying a lot of weight for anywhere from 10 to 20 days on these backcountry sheep hunts. And so we're able to give them a meal that's over 700 calories that they can eat, and then they may not need to eat until lunchtime. So if that's the goal, is if we can have a meal that they're happy with, then that trickles down. And so that I think we've achieved that based on the feedback we've had. So we've really tried to specialize in the breakfast market and optimize every single piece of it we can.
That's awesome. And I thought we talked about a little bit before the podcast, but I ordered like the pack today. And so I can't wait to get these suckers in. And I can tell you, I've never had a breakfast from anybody so far that I thoroughly enjoyed. So, but I mean, looking at your flavor profile, I'm excited.
Yes. And the variety is important. I think right now we have six flavors. The final two are going to be reintroduced here in February, but they would be caramel apple, our top seller, and cranberry white chocolate is a nut-free version as well. So there's a nice, whatever mood you're in during the day, if you're just taking a break and want something less calories, or if you have a big day with lots of miles and want something sweeter, we've got our bases covered.
Nice. Can you walk us through the process of when you think that you have a new flavor profile, how testing and finalizing that recipe?
Sure. The caramel apple, I guess, was a good one to start with. We felt like that the testing, it's certainly an iterative process. On that one, it might be an exception, but Emily had known from the first four recipes what the wet mixture to dry mixture of ingredients needed to be, the ratios. And so with that one, some Saturday morning in the kitchen here, she's like, I think we need a caramel type flavor. It's got to be maple syrup, not honey. We need dried apples. And so I was saying, well, they need to be baked apples. They can't be freeze dried because freeze dried apples are mushy. We need the right texture, the right consistency. So she hit that one out of the park nearly on the first try. And we just had to play with what kind of caramel we wanted in there. Originally, we bought caramel nibs, which are just a bag with little hard candy pieces, and those didn't melt, so they ended up being really tough. We ended up sending packets out to our maybe six folks that we have that are customers that we can rely on their feedback, and we sent everyone samples, said to try it hot or cold, and then sent out feedback forms. That's generally what we do, and so we got feedback from that. They said they didn't like the caramel and that, and then in talking with my wife, we thought, well, we've got a local caramel source here, a confectioner that's got world-class award-winning caramel. Let's get on the phone with them and ask if we can buy their caramel as an ingredient. And so that's what we did, and it worked out amazingly well. It bakes in really, really well. We buy it in 20-pound boxes and cut it up and bake it in. Obviously, not all the caramel makes it into the mix. So with the caramel apple, we buy the boxes and 20-pound boxes of caramel, bake it in, and it works out really well. When you make that one hot with hot water, it ends up melting the caramel in all the way. If you make it cold, you end up with these nice chunks of caramel that you can eat. So it ends up tasting like warm apple pie. It's by far our best seller. But to answer your question more succinctly, we have a set group of testers, and we send products out to them, get feedback with forms, and then just hone it in until I'm usually happier far sooner than my wife. If we can make her happy, then we know that it's a absolute all-star product. Like I said, yeah, if she's happy, the general public typically loves it. She's a phenomenal cook.
Nice. I was going to ask you if you ever need additional testers, let me know where I can sign up. I'll be all over that.
Sounds good.
So how much feedback do you get from the hiking and backpacking community on the products?
We start with that subset of folks, and then once we've proven that idea out, we're monitoring feedback all the time on our website. We send a lot of product out to our dealers. We introduced trail cookies in 2024, spring of 2024. And that's another product line that I failed to mention. We wanted something that fit well with, we didn't want to get into dinners. There's a lot of hoops to jump through there with freeze drying and with meat and all of these things, fire suppression in your facility. So we stayed away from that and went towards cookies. They have a lot of overlapping ingredients with our meals. But when we introduced those, we got feedback from folks. And then once we have the packaging designed, even before that, I guess, we did send a few out to dealers and said, this is coming down the pike. So I think we're always getting feedback. Some of that's helped us when we've had suppliers that have given us bad ingredients, for example. We're able to identify that quickly and move away from certain suppliers just to keep our quality high. So we've always got our ear to the ground. Trade shows is another great way. When we there's a trade show in Salt Lake that we've gone to historically, a four-day show, and we hand out about 2,000 samples during that show. So you're able, we've tested cookies at that show, for example. That's a great way to, when we were about 1 year out from launching that, we hadn't refined the recipe quite enough, but we wanted some feedback to see what people thought about the size of the cookie, how many to put in a pouch, are these flavors good? We got tons of feedback in a short amount of time at the trade shows.
I think cookies are a great idea because, you know, you're on a backpacking trip, and you just want something sweet and, or, you know, that just kind of takes your mind off the trail and it's not beef jerky.
No kidding. There's a lot of snack fatigue, I think, with all the trail bars that are out there and trail mix.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the biggest dilemma that I have on backpacking trips. I just hiked the longest trail in Texas, just got back. I don't know, about a week ago or so. And it's Trailhead One is just about 35 minutes from my house. It's 128 miles with the loops, 96.4 miles if you just hike the main trail. And that was the biggest dilemma, is sitting here going, okay, what do I want for snacks?
Yes.
Oh, I don't want beef jerky, or I don't want trail mix. So cookies, yeah, that's I'll be definitely buying some from you for sure.
Well, they're basically a meal replacement. So, you know, just eat the whole bag and call it lunch.
I hear that. So if you look back at all the products that you have, what product took you the longest to perfect?
That would be the trail cookies by far. Yeah. That's for a variety of reasons. One being they're gluten-free, and anybody that's done baking knows that gluten-free baking is quite challenging to... We were trying to get a bunch of competing factors correct. We wanted the taste to be right. We wanted the durability to be right, the texture to be right, and also the calorie and macro composition to be correct. So my wife, we experimented with bars, and we could never find one that a combination that we liked that was unique enough that we felt like we could put our name on it. And we pivoted over to cookies because there wasn't much competition in that market, and everyone loves cookies, right? That seems like a win if we could make something durable that wouldn't blow up in your pack, that was gluten-free like our granola meals. So that whole process was around a year and a half from start to finish until we actually had a product to sell. And that was 100% my wife on that one. She knew what the goal was, and she did. She's a person that does not give up easily at all, if ever. So she was pretty tenacious in getting that one and just iterating on it. And then once we got the recipes, got the pouches printed and everything, we bought a cookie depositing machine because we can't hand deposit those in volume. And, you know, you'll obviously need to get surgery or something to redeem herself after depositing that many cookies. So we found a used cookie depositing machine, and when we got it, we had tested it before. This was a machine that was up in Alaska, so we had customers in Alaska that took our ingredients and did a demo up there with the company who was selling the machine, tested our recipes, and then we got it down here and tried it out and just had 2 weeks of failures. We could not get the machine to work correctly. It wouldn't deposit the cookies and punch them out the way we wanted. So it had to do with humidity and temperature being different from where we're at versus up in Alaska, but we finally were able to hone that in. And so that one from start to finish was just kind of a brutal process, but we're proud of the product we ended up with.
One thing you said, I think I even read it, but you said it earlier, is these meals, and it excited me. It's not just like you can have it with cold water or hot water. Like, you know, you don't have to have a stove with you. You know, you can just pour some water into the bag and the right amount and have a breakfast, and you don't need stoves and you don't have to have all this extra stuff. And I was thinking about it, like for me being in Texas, man, you know, it's hot and it would be nice to have a breakfast that is, you know, has some nutritional value on trail that's just easy to deal with, and you're not having to stove and hot and all this other stuff. So that really excited me, reading about that and then you confirming it. So to the listeners, check them out. You don't always have to have a hot meal.
Yes, cold soaking is a great option. In the summer, I'm super lazy. If I boil water, it's for my coffee, or I can skip coffee, but I want a meal quickly and without much effort. And yes, that's a great feature.
So looking at your products, and you know, you design them for the outdoors, whether it's hunting, hiking, backpacking, you know, all these types of activities. Do you also see these meals great for just everyday use as well?
Yes, we sell some through, I guess it'd be like a Whole Foods, but in Bozeman, there's a lot of outdoorsy type people, but I know that some of them order extra or buy extra just to have at home. They're great to keep in your car for emergencies, or I eat them. So I'm actually, as our business is growing, I have worked inside and outside of the business. Currently, I'm working outside of the business, and I show up to work at 6:30 in the morning. So I'm not always Johnny on the spot with breakfast at home. So I will probably eat these meals at least 3 days a week myself right now, just at my desk. So yeah, they're super convenient when you just need something that'll fill you up and don't have to think about it much.
Yeah. Kind of looking at sourcing the ingredients, I had Jen on from Good to Go, and that was a pretty big topic, just getting the right ingredients. And like you were talking about the caramel, making sure that it fits with your needs. So when you're looking at sourcing ingredients, do you focus more on like just local, if it's organic or ethically sourced? How does that decision-making process work?
Great question. We've made a few mistakes with our ingredient sourcing, not, I don't think out of ignorance, but it's always a learn-as-you-go thing, and you try things out. Some things work and some don't. And we start local when we can, and then we expand out from there as we need to. With our caramel, we were just fortunate enough to have an incredible company within 2 miles of our kitchen. So that was just luck on our part. I think with our oats, we tried to source locally out of a company that's about 8 miles away, and they use a different steam rolling technique with their oats. And so they had a step in there that is not as rigorous, I guess, is what you'd see with a Bob's Red Mill oat, rolled oat, where the steam actually serves a couple of functions. One is to kill certain things in the oat, And so there's different proteins in there that react differently. And some of them are more shelf stable than others. And what you ended up with the local company is not an oat that was harmful in any way, I don't think. It just tasted poor after a while. And so in our first batch, we started in October. By January, we had a customer review that was pretty scathing. And so we looked into it and we kept parts of each batch back so that we can always test. But in that case, the oats were not good. And so we had to shut down for a month while we figured it out. We thought it was something else because some of the flavors showed the poor taste and others didn't. But the ones that didn't just had enough chocolate or whatever to mask the flavor, but it was present in all of them. So yes, we've had, in that case, we had to do a dealer recall from only one dealer, thankfully, that we had at the time since we were small. And finally, we figured it out. We talked to food scientists. We were kind of in panic mode for about 3 weeks while we were completely shut down. We had just opened up. We found an alternate supplier once we identified what the issue was, and we haven't had that issue since. But we've found some of our greatest, best suppliers at regional food shows, where it's kind of a grocery show where you're exhibiting for grocers, and just talked with folks at the show. We've interacted a lot with other food manufacturers, backpacking food manufacturers. If we're struggling with pouch sourcing, or people have hit us up for answers as well. So it's a very collaborative environment where we're trying to help each other find good ingredients and good costs. But it takes multiple years, I think, to dial it in. Some of our freeze-dried fruit, for example, we start with the most expensive 2-pound bags because that's what we can afford, you know, smaller batches at a higher price. And now we've been able to trace the supply chain back to where we can buy from the larger freeze-dry companies. But that took 4 years to finally get to where you're at the most economical purchase quantities. So yeah, it's a mix of growing your business to where you can afford to buy larger sizes, but also contacts matter significantly. And so trying to figure those right people out is a problem sometimes. But
I think you already answered this, but have you found ways to reduce the food waste during production? And I think you mentioned the cookies, that they share a lot of the same ingredients. So anything else that you've discovered on reducing food waste?
No, that's not an issue for us, like it would be with someone who makes dinner meals, perhaps. Every ingredient that we have is shelf stable. So we don't require refrigeration or freezing. Sometimes I guess with the exception of maybe buying lemons and oranges from Costco that we use for the zest, if we run into a bad batch of those, we just throw them out. But our waste is very minimal. There's been times in the beginning where we overcooked plenty of things as we dialed in our baking times. But I think in the more recent last 2 or 3 years, food waste is, I'd say, below 2% for us. It's pretty small.
Nice. All right. So what is the funniest or most unexpected customer feedback you've received?
That, if you asked my wife, she would say it's the first year we went to a hunting trade show in Salt Lake. And I think people tend to overlook granola. They think, well, it's just granola, right? How good can it be? How I'm making it sound technical here with all of our macros and everything, which to us it is. We're trying to create an optimal product that outperforms everyone else's breakfast and is the one that people want to choose. But I think what we get sometimes from men as well, because granola is not maybe a manly food. So at these hunting shows, we've had wives who would come through and say, well, it's good, but I'm not going to get it because my husband won't eat it, or, you know, that kind of thing. And so we just say, well, just, you know, give it to him. Just let him try it. it speaks for itself. We had one guy who came by the booth, and this is the one I'm hinting at with my wife. She was standing there, gave this guy a sample, and off he goes. He was probably 20 feet away, and you just hear him start cursing. And he's like, bleepity bleep, this stuff is good. So he came all the way back just to talk to us about why it was what it was and why it was so good. So I think that one more than any stand out, just as someone looking at it. Granola is not very pleasing when it's just in a sample cup. It looks pale. It doesn't look that appetizing, but yes, that would be my feedback there.
Nice. So what's been the most unusual location or coolest location that you've ever eaten your product at, or you've seen like someone post on social media that they're partaking in the meal?
We get a few customer emails with pictures. We had one down in, I think it was Belize or somewhere down there on the beach. That was a fun one.
Wow.
We gave meals to a bunch of young ladies who were doing a row across the Atlantic a few years ago. So this was an all women's rowing. They were supporting conservation and ocean research. And so they gave us several images. They're buried a little bit now on our social media, but seeing these ladies, they were two people rowing, two people sleeping nonstop. I think it was around 30 to 35 days, just all the terrible weather that they had. So that made us pretty proud that we could support a trek like that, which is very non-backpacking, I guess you would say, but it's an endurance. They need meals. They can't afford long prep times or soak times. They need quick, nutritious meals. And so that one stands out. And then the man, like I mentioned earlier, with celiac, I didn't get any photos from him, but knowing that our meals were up in Greenland helping someone who had stomach issues, we were proud of that one.
Nice. So what is your favorite trail snack pairing with your meals?
So for breakfast, I generally use one of our breakfasts with coffee. For dinners, I'm pretty basic. I just do one of the smaller brands that we like, along with maybe some chocolate, and that's dinner for me. But for lunches, I use snacks exclusively for my lunches. I don't use freeze-dried meals. I'd say my go-tos would be tortillas with peanut butter. I just fold them in half and put them in a Ziploc bag. I use those all the time. I'm a big M&Ms with peanuts. I love those. And then dried mangoes. And then instead of granola bars, I like Belvita breakfast bars. Those, I just use some combination of that for lunch typically. I don't get a ton of jerky. I know the prices on it lately are crazy, but I'm not a huge jerky fan.
I like jerky, but I don't want it on trail, you know, and yes. Everybody, you know, I have my hiking buddies and everybody, you know, they have, except for Sam, he just brings McDonald's cheeseburgers on the trip, everything. But yeah, I mean, everybody has jerky and I'm like, no jerky. So I love this question. What role do you think food plays in the morale of hiking and backpacking and the community on trail?
I think it plays a massive role because it's one of the luxury items that you can turn into a luxury item. It's a necessity, obviously, but with a little planning and research and testing, you can turn it into something that you really look forward to and that boosts morale. So having a food, instead of, for example, being on the trail and having two packets of Quaker oats to look forward to, if you have a caramel apple granola to look forward to, or some incredible fettuccine dinner or something that you crave. I don't know. I think it's something that I look forward to. Everyone knows that food tastes better when you're backpacking, but when you have really good food with you, it just takes it even further.
Also, I think it brings us together, right? Like you show up at a shelter and you see someone that has granola with apples and caramel, you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yes. Where have I been?
What is that? You know, so, you know, I've noticed that you may not know the person, or it could be just with your, like my hiking group, you know, we're probably tired of each other being on the trail. We get to camp, no one's talking, everybody's in their kind of own little area, and then somebody has some cool food, and you know, it really brings us back together, or you know, brings strangers together. So I think it plays a big, like you were talking about the morale, but a big part of the community and kind of what makes our community so wonderful.
Absolutely. And we don't have as many of the larger through hikes in Montana. We've got the CDT trail, but it's a lot less, I guess, busy than the PCT, et cetera. But yes, food certainly shared around a campfire or shared. That's when I go, I'm generally a solo backpacker, but now as I'm getting a little bit older, I'm taking my kids out. And so that's the food part of it becomes even more important. Yes, sitting around the campfire and telling stories and sharing some memories there.
Absolutely. So what do you think the biggest myth people have or believe about backpacking food?
I think the biggest historical myth is that it tastes like crap. And that was true 20 years ago. But now, like when I grew up backpacking, we didn't take freeze-dried meals. They were too expensive. So when I was in high school, so I'm 43, I was in high school in the late 90s. And so I grew up backpacking with, we would take Hot Pockets with us and cook them over the fire, take hot dogs, all of that sort of thing. So we cooked fish, whatever, but it was all non-backpacking food, I guess. And so I think there's been so many strides made in the backpacking food world that people think, well, I can't eat well, but there's so much variety now that whatever your palate is or what your dietary restrictions are, there's a lot of good options for people.
Absolutely. I'll be 53 in 3 days. And you're only 43? Man, just wait till you get in your 50s.
I'll need a thicker pad, I think.
Yep. No, I think you nailed it. And with the amount of food that's out there these days, like if you are going hiking and backpacking with crappy food, that's on you. You know, that's your fault, because your company and some of the others, that there's so much variety. You don't have to have that egg scramble in the morning. Like, there's way better options. But yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, is that you know, the people just believe that it's just cardboard, and these days it's not, for sure.
And the other thing I think people struggle with is they don't know how to eat on the trail, when to eat, how many calories to take. So I think that's a process where you just need to get out and try it and see what your body needs. And, oh, I'm going to crash if I don't eat every hour, or, you know, how do I ration my food? Oh, I need, a lot of people take way too much food and take over 2 pounds for a day, and you need to look at it a little more. It's complicated, and on the other hand, it's not, right? I mean, once you get a system dialed in, you're good to go, but it can be pretty daunting in the beginning. So reading articles or talking with people who can help you is a good resource.
Yeah, and also just get out there and do it. Try it. And to the listeners, I know we've talked about it on previous episodes. Don't take something on a trip that you've never experienced before. So every snack, every meal, make sure that you have consumed it in the activity that you are currently in. Because I've even had it where in my normal day I can eat this, but like on a backpacking trip, it impacts my body. I'm diabetic. It impacts my body differently during an activity. Like it makes me not feel as well and stuff. So never, never, never. When you're having a trip, make sure that you experience the snacks, the meals, everything that you're going to take in the same activity that you're going to be doing when you do consume it. I've heard horror stories, and even experienced people that I've hiked with that tried something new on trail, and it was horrible for them, with tummy issues and stuff. So what do you think is the most rewarding part of running a small outdoor food company?
Well, that's a great question. The most rewarding part for me, I think, was I've worked in some larger corporations, and the disconnect is pretty prevalent between effort and take your pick, right? I mean, you feel lost a lot of times in a big corporation. I know many people can relate to that. So they feel like their work doesn't matter, or maybe they don't have a connection with the customers that are the end users. They just do a task and it goes down the road. So for me, having worked in large corporations for 10 or 11 years, I think the greatest part to me is that I get to touch every piece of it. It's the product ideas, or my wife and I, as we do the field testing, send the products out for feedback. We do the manufacturing. We're doing the podcast here, which, who knows, maybe someone will come up to me at a trade show in the future and say, hey, I listened to Jason's podcast. So I get to connect all the dots, and that's amazing. That's really rewarding for me. And then the feedback piece on the tail end, after people have tried our products, they leave us reviews and then they come back to order more, or they refer us to a different dealer. So the community, I guess being able to touch everything, I'm the type of person that I do well with a lot of variety. I get bored easily. So I think being involved in all the different aspects is awesome. I love that part. I get to work with my wife, which was challenging in the beginning, but now is pretty cool. And the community is growing up. I guess in my career, I work for FLIR Systems, which makes lasers, and I work for the Boeing company in Seattle. And both of those environments are pretty corporate, and they're also kind of in the tech world, so people guard their secrets. And in the outdoor industry, I was shocked at how helpful everyone was, which was really uplifting, especially when you're trying to figure it out. How do I do QuickBooks? How do I get a food license? How do I tackle this packaging stuff? What do I need? I mean, the PDF that tells you what can and can't be on your labeling is over 200 pages long. So you have to navigate that. And how do I get inspections? So we've had to lean on so many different people to get where we're at, for investing, to get buy equipment. It's just, the list is immense of people that we have to thank that have helped us out. So yeah, I think we're very grateful for the community overall.
It's an amazing community for sure. So what challenges do you think you face that maybe bigger brands don't?
Getting threatened by a lawsuit. We don't have legal protection, or if you do, you pay for it at $500 an hour. So there's a lot of larger corporations that try and take advantage of smaller ones, I would say, through negotiating unfair pricing. Not to call any of them out by name, but there's a larger corporation that we did a pitch at for a competition that we were ultimately awarded a contract with, and we ended up not moving forward on it. I think just because they slice the margins so thin that there's nothing left, and if anything goes wrong, you're left holding the bag, and they, if they pull your product off the shelf, you've invested all this time and energy to be there. So I think, yeah, there's just a multitude. We can't afford, for us to buy pouches at the cheapest rate possible, we would need to buy 3 years worth at our current production rates. And we'd have to put up somewhere between $40,000 and $60,000 to buy that. And so that's just a no-go. So we're dealing with slimmer margins right off the bat. But that being said, it's not an easy task being in food in particular. So respect to anyone that's, I'm sure in the conversations you've had with other food manufacturers, it's a very difficult thing, but it can also be very rewarding. You just need to be patient and really be quite flexible with all the different curveballs that come your way.
Yeah. And, you know, like we talked about I think it was before, maybe at the beginning of the podcast, I love these episodes. I love shining the light the best that I can on companies like yours that, again, give so much to our community as well as take on all this risk, whether it's through vocation in the small towns that they're in with people having a job or all, you know, all the risk. So I hope the goal of this podcast is in the future that not just one person comes up to you and says, "Hey, I heard this on the Trailblazing Texas podcast. I want to buy some meals. I want," my goal is that the listeners, we buy you out. Like, you have no more inventory. But like every week we're just, so that's my goal. It's not just one person that has heard this and supporting you guys. It's that everybody just, it's just part of their hiking, backpacking season is stocking up on the food.
Yes. And thank you for your support in the community is great. I think I was the type of person that didn't always support small brands. I think being kind of a nerdy mathematical mindset, I would say, well, I can save a little bit of money over here, so I'm just going to do that. And now, having been a small business owner, I try to go out of my way at gift time to support local artists and things like that, just because I know, being in their shoes, I know what it means to have, even if it costs a little bit more. I'm not here angling for anyone to, you know, hey, come over and buy my stuff. I'm just saying, in general, take a step back. Small business matters. And especially over the last year with some of the ups and downs with tariffs and things, like, these smaller businesses don't have as much leverage. And so I have increasingly a heart for small business as well. And I'm applaud you for being in that space and trying to help.
Yeah, you know, it was with Marion Outdoors with Coach, just talking about, like, if I'm going to place an order, why not try the small businesses that maybe aren't in my local community? I'm going to have to wait for it to be delivered anyway, right? I ordered from a big box store that's an outfitter that's very popular, 3 or 4 pair of socks and an Nalgene. And then an hour later, I had to get approval from my wife that I could reorder the same stuff because I just wanted to make a point. And so she approved it. So about an hour later, or 2 hours later, I ordered from Coach. Same number of socks, Nalgene bottle. And I received his order 2 days before I received the big box store. So, like, my point is like, if you're ordering and you're going to have to wait, why not? Who cares if Marion Outdoors is not in Texas or whatever? You know, it's ways away. I don't know where that big box store order is coming from. Or, you know, like with you, I know my backpacking season and hiking season, when it starts and when it ends, and to get ready for it, place the order, you know, and get it delivered. So yeah, I have a passion to get the word out about businesses like this. And I hope that the listeners take it to heart and buy everything you got. I hope that you come back on the podcast one day and you send me an email and say, "Jason, tell everybody to stop. we're out of inventory." So do you have any, speaking of other businesses, small businesses and stuff, so do you have any collaboration with anybody that's maybe not, that's in the outdoor community, but that's not like under the food umbrella?
Sure. Yes, we do. In the beginning, when we did not have a large email subscriber list or large Instagram following, we relied heavily on brand collaborations for giveaways, either to grow our social media following, just try and get the word out. And so we were not top of mind for anyone as an incredibly small brand. We still are. We're still two people. But we set up a bunch of multi-brand giveaways. Since we weren't getting invited to any, I thought, well, how do we? Well, let's just do our own. We'll figure it out. So we put the widgets on our website, started emailing brands. And so we started with 6 brand giveaways and 8 brand giveaways. And our biggest ones in 2024, I think, was a 14 brand giveaway. So we've been able to collaborate with Oboe's Shoes, for example, or Climate Sleeping Pads, as well as a lot of different truly small food, gear, you name it, type type companies, artists as well. So I think that that's been a lot of fun, just to meet other makers, I guess, manufacturers in the space. And then, yeah, that's, I think, primarily through those giveaways or meeting other brands at trade shows that we do here in Montana, as well as across the region. So it's always fun to see why people started what they started, how they're going about it. And nearly everyone is doing it because they love it. They're not in it to make a killing financially. They know it's a lot of work, but it's rewarding as well.
Yeah, I can remember starting this podcast. Like, I reached out to Texas State Parks or, you know, wherever, guests. And I'm like, I don't have any episodes yet, but I'm thinking about doing a podcast. And would you like to come on? And so, like, my first guest was my wife.
There you go.
You know, to have some episodes. And then I started hitting up all my friends that I hike with. Hey, you want to come on my podcast? So, yeah, I don't monetize this. This is a hobby of mine. I love it. And it was stressful for me, and it still is, but it's still fun. Like, it's not like I have to do it. But yeah, I can imagine starting a company where, you know, you need to get the word out and stuff. It's, I couldn't imagine the stress. And also, like, you know, getting other outdoor companies to collab and, you know, like, do some things to benefit the community. Yeah. It's, bet you there was a lot of sleepless nights.
There has been a few, yes. Typically at big inflection points. do we try and get into our own kitchen space and not rent anymore, or those types of things? But yeah, I think you just do the best you can with the information you have and try and keep moving forward.
So if we just look at the hiking and backpacking community, how do you connect with this community beyond just kind of selling the foods, like you were talking about? Maybe there are some events that you go to, Trail Magic. I mean, is there what is y'all's way to kind of to get the word out and connect with our community?
We do every little side of it that we can. I think when we started our business, we signed up to be part of 2% for Conservation. That's a local organization. So we have the branding on the back of our pouches, and we donate 1% of our proceeds and 1% of our time to volunteer. So that ends up being about 20 hours of volunteering a year. And that 2% has recently changed to Fish and Wildlife Volunteers. They changed their name, but they have an incredibly long list on their website of places where you can volunteer. And so we started with that, just as a way to force ourselves, I guess, to volunteer every year to make sure that it was on the calendar. And supporting conservation is big to us. And so we've met a lot of different businesses and different community members through those events. We've done trail maintenance in the Beartooths. I took my daughter out for 2 years to do mountain goat surveys with the local fish and wildlife biologists. So that was a good excuse to get out and help monitor the wildlife for them. So those types of things are helpful. We get hit up all the time for local events where there's a outdoor movie screening or something where they need people to put booths up. So we're pretty open-minded and try and take advantage of some of these opportunities to just get out and then mingle with people and see what happens.
Yeah, nice. All right. You don't have to answer this question. I understand that, you know, there's some secretive stuff going on here, maybe. So are there any new products or flavors that you're working on that you can give the listeners a little sneak peek?
Sure. I don't try and hold anything back there. So we have the 4 flavors of granola live on the website right now. We're reintroducing orange, pecan, and coconut mango in early to mid-February, so then we'll be back at full strength on our granola. And this is all just recovering from the rebrand that we went through. The cookies, we have not had in stock since April of last year when the rebrand went live, so we were finally able to get good pricing on packaging. So those will the packaging lands tomorrow, and we will have those back online in early February. So that's maple pecan, monster cookie, and German chocolate. So those three will be back online. And then this is one we haven't told anybody on social media yet, but we have a new line of freeze-dried coffee that will be coming online probably by the first or second week of February. It's in production right now.
Are you joking?
No.
Are you going to have a subscription?
It's a wonderful coffee that we found a while ago, and we're finally able to put the pieces together to make it happen now. So it's Angry Pika, just a black, I don't know, we might call it Pika Perk or something funny like that. But it's a craft paper sachet, a waterproof sachet, single serve. We'll just sell them on our website and get some feedback, and maybe down the road offer them wholesale, but it'll be a exclusive through our website in the near term. So that's a product launch that we have in Q1, I guess, for this year, 2026. And then our goal for this year was just to stabilize. Last year was so up and down. We weren't able to bring back all of our flavors. So that's the current goal, is to bring all the flavors back, which we're on track for. And then we'll add the coffee to the mix, and then we'll ride with that for a while and see how it goes.
Please let me know via email, or I'm going to be checking at least once a week when I can start ordering some coffee.
Yes. Well, we just have told people in our newsletter that we have a new product launch planned, and that it is not a snack or a breakfast. So that's as far as nice. We've teased it so far, but now you know what the gossip is.
Nice, nice, nice. I love this question. So where do you hope Angry Pika Foods will be in 5 years?
That's a great question. 5 years. So we started in 2019. It's 2026 right now. We've had some ups and downs. Presently, just we're trying to focus on bringing the business back to where it was in 2024. So last year, due to the rebrand and the economic situation, we lost over 30% of our revenue, which I went back to work full-time outside of the business in July of last year. So we knew that we needed to stabilize things, try and make the rebrand successful, and put every dollar back into the business that we could. So we weren't even sure if we were going to get through 2025, to be honest. So we're excited to still be here. So we're optimistic that 2026 will go well, and maybe we can recover back to where we were, you know, pre-rebrand. But 5 years down the road, I think what would be ideal for what I would like would be to work full-time in the business and have 1, 2, 3 employees maybe that would help us out, and just be at a place where we're providing great food to people. We're providing a few jobs, good, stable, meaningful work for a few people. And our kitchen also this year is pivoting. Since our revenue went down, we advertised that our kitchen was available for rent. So we have a 1,700 square foot kitchen. And so we needed some help just to pay the overhead every month, especially during the winter when things are slow. And so we've got two young gals, entrepreneurs, that are starting their own businesses that are using their kitchen. So we're not, I guess, really mentoring them as so much as just providing them a good, safe, clean space to work. It's hard to find commercial kitchen space to rent, and so their products complement ours. And they help us, we help them. And so that's kind of a fun place to be in. But we would love to continue collaborating, continue growing our products. Just expand our dealer base and see what happens. We want to be around in a meaningful way in 5 years, and hopefully working full-time in our business and giving back to conservation and all of the things that matter.
Nice.
So how do you see the backpacking food industry evolving, let's say, over the next 5 years?
In the next 5 years, I think there's a real risk for the outdoor industry at large, not just in the food industry, but we've seen so much consolidation happening. That's been troubling to watch, I think. But I think that that will continue to happen. You see a lot of larger brands. It being in Bozeman, there are a lot of larger outdoor brands that make their headquarters here. We have Sitka Camo here. We have Sims Fishing Products that makes waders. They're based out of here. I've actually worked for them on a part-time basis when I needed extra hours. We've got Stone Glacier that makes hunting clothing. We've got Oboe Shoes is headquartered here. But a lot of the brands, most recently Stone Glacier, who makes hunting packs and hunting gear, they got bought out by private equity, and then Sims as well got bought out by private equity. So there's been a troubling decline in quality as these companies don't need to be financially accountable. They tend to prioritize profits over quality and kind of leave the company hanging when they sell it. So I think that in the food space this last year, there has been, I'm meaning the last 12 months, there has been two small outdoor food companies that have contacted us to ask if we could buy them. We were not in a position to do that, but one of those is out of business. The other got purchased successfully. So there's just been a lot of turnover, companies going out of business in the last year. That's obviously not unique to outdoor food. That's happened in general, but the consolidation is troubling to watch. So I think it's important now more than ever to support small brands, even if they're not my brand, but support each other and try and help the small business economy continue to stabilize and hopefully grow, because that's where all the cool stuff happens. I think the innovation starts there and then gets purchased by larger corporations. So I've worked for large and small corporations, and I think, yeah, it's just a situation that's certainly not unique to America, but it's something we're going through right now.
Very well said. And, you know, this is another little message to the listeners. We, as a collective, have so much power to support businesses like this, to support these, I don't want to say mom and pop shops, but these small businesses, again, that take on all this risk, as we've heard, you know, in this episode and with Hilltop Packs, with Trekker Joe's, with Marion Outdoors, with Trail Brush. You know, they take on all this risk through vocation and stuff. And why would we not support them? You know, just listening to this should motivate you to, you know, to support them. And if it doesn't, then man, this, go listen to Joe Rogan or something. You know, it's, we just have so much power, and as a community, as a collective, like, why not? You know, why not? So as we kind of start to wrap up, last two questions. How do you hope Angry Pika inspires hikers beyond filling their stomachs?
I hope that Angry Pika, just the name, the image, which our coffee mug, a screaming pika, I hope that it emboldens people to go after what they want. I think in terms of outdoor, if you're scared of doing a 5-day trip, but you're comfortable with doing overnighters, then stretch yourself a little bit. Go after the thing that you want to do. If you're wanting to do a through hike, then maybe you can afford to do a couple weeks here and there, maybe not all in one chunk, but just put it on the calendar and go after it. I think in a world where public lands are under threat every day, even little things like calling your senator matter, showing up for trail days and just picking up garbage when you're out there. I don't know. I hope that if the great outdoors and wild and scenic places did not exist, we would not have a company. So go enjoy them. They're you only live once, so get out there and have some fun.
I like this question. So if you could go back to day one of Angry Pika, what advice would you give yourself?
Oh, man, I don't know. Be patient. It's going to be way, way, way harder than you thought it was. So don't set your expectations too high. Just chip away at it every day. I think I had a few, well, my wife will say I told you so. But I think she had a understanding, a gut understanding of how hard it would be more than I did. So I would just tell myself, success is not X amount of dealers in the first year. Success is enjoying the journey, making the relationships, and just patiently letting it happen. I think with talking with dealers in the early days, we would get one dealer for every 10 cold calls. We distribute to Canada. That relationship took over a year and a half to happen. So yeah, just be persistent and be patient.
Nice. I love it. All right. Last question. If you could step back from this Angry Pika journey and leave a message to everyone that has supported you along the way, what would it be?
It'd be a heartfelt thank you, and I owe you one. People, when they look at our company, they look at our dealer list, which has 150 names on it, and they think that we've achieved something. I can tell you from working full-time outside the business currently, I'd say it looks good on our webpage, but we haven't arrived yet at all. So we're enjoying the journey. We're still here. I would say just a heartfelt thank you. We've had people in our business complex that have lent us money to keep the lights on. We've had family members step up, church members step up and say, hey, we know you're going through this rebrand. We get it. We've had musical instruments donated to our kids because we couldn't afford them ourselves. And so that's just being frank. Like, we've put all of our time, all of our effort, all of our dollars into this. And to many, that looks terribly foolish. And I don't think they'd be wrong to say that, but at the same time, we're working to fulfill our version of the American dream. So to everyone who believed in us enough to buy a product or even like a post on Instagram, it would be a heartfelt thank you. And we owe a lot of favors forward, and we will try and operate in a manner that allows us to do that, to be generous, to be empathetic, and to be hopeful and to be kind to our community.
Wonderfully said. Wow. All right, Sean. I, again, can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast. I could probably talk to you for hours, but I know you are busy, father, working, kids, all, you know, husband, all that kind of stuff. Again, thank you. This has been a wonderful episode. And again, you know, I can't thank you enough. And it's been a real pleasure to hear about the business, to get to know you a little bit. And thank you.
Yes. Thanks for the opportunity, Jason. It's wonderful to get to meet other outdoors men and women. And thank you for helping us spread the word about our brand. And we appreciate your taking the time and support of small business.
Absolutely. You have a wonderful rest of your day.
Yes. Enjoy the warmer Texas weather for us.
It ain't much warmer, I don't think.
Well, maybe next week.
Bye. And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode today, and stay tuned for our next episode where we will pick back up where we left off and guarantee to uncover many more hiking gems and share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking.